the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site, recording with my co-host, Seth Cox, from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and the second show of the week, as we have just a touch of Cardinals stuff going on. This, I don't think this will be a huge show, but we finally got the news drop about the changes in the coaching staff, and while we knew most of them, there were a couple of surprise departures, but for me, one in particular, and that was Rob Rodriguez, outside linebacker coach, who'd been here for a couple of years. You'd see him in the work that he did with Zaven Collins and this and that, but he was not retained and he was replaced. So, I mean, when you saw that, Seth, was that altogether surprising to you? I think for me, it was more surprising that no one had reported it.
Yeah, I think that was the surprise, right? Because we got LeBlanc, obviously the guys that left for new jobs we got. And so to not get that information seemed odd, right? Like, why didn't that one come out? But, you know, at the end of the day, too, it could have been one of those where there were some negotiations and they just go, yeah, this isn't working for us. Like, not that, like, in a way that comes off as like, we want to get rid of you, but in like it's not worth it type of thing, right? Like, yeah. Negotiations aren't going, and I'm just spitballing, but you know, negotiations aren't going the way we wanted. You're not a guy that is of huge importance for us to retain. We're just going to go in a different way because this isn't going how we had hoped. And you know, that unfortunately happens. We talk about it with assistant coaches all the time. You know, it's really a two-way street. You're either Jeff Stoutland, you know, from the Eagles, Jeff Rogers, guys that basically are the right-hand men of the guys, the head coaches, or you're using this as a springboard, right? You're trying to get to the next level to become a defense coordinator, offense coordinator, depending on obviously side of the ball. And you're trying to become a guy that is going to take those next steps to becoming a head coach in the NFL. And, you know, for a lot of guys, Spencer Whipple, you know, you spend 6 years and two coaching regimes on a staff. That's actually incredibly impressive and says a lot about you as a person, because what that usually means is, oh, everybody likes him. Everybody's happy with him. And they're not actively trying to replace you, because that's the thing is you rarely see position coaches fired, right? Like, but it is very common for them not to be retained. And so, you know, you rarely see, unless it's just the whole staff getting blown out, you rarely see guys not finish up their two-year contract. And so I think that was the biggest thing that we saw is, you know, it for some reason, either Rodriguez and the Cardinals couldn't come to an agreement, or that was the most hush-hush move that they made, which, not that I dislike the addition of Matt Kenny, but it seems odd that would be the most secretive one, wouldn't it? Like,
yeah, well, yeah, to me, it also because they did not bring back, so they actively decided not to bring back LeBlanc. Sefkis, the linebackers coach, takes a defensive coordinator job at Virginia Tech, which is obviously in some ways a promotion, because even though it's in the college ranks, it's still a better title. But, and then Rob Rodriguez is, it almost makes me think that Sefkis, follow me on this. Look, all three of their front seven position coaches were replaced. So I wonder if Sefkis saw writing on the wall and had an opportunity, and had he not gotten that job at Virginia Tech, that probably he would have been replaced too. And I, you know, for whatever reason, now I will say this, that none of those three guys, from what I recall, where did Rob Rodriguez work before?
He was at
Arizona State.
Yeah, but he was with the Vikings as an assistant defensive line.
Okay, coach. Okay. Okay, he was there. And was he at all with Indy?
I know.
Okay. So there was a brief connection.
I did, yes. He was there during the Minnesota days, I believe. They were there, yeah, 2015 to 2019. So there was overlap there. And he was just an assistant defensive line coach. The other thing I was wondering, and again, spitballing, do you think potentially that with Sefkis leaving, whether, like you said, on his own accord, or maybe they said, hey, go find something before we don't retain you, that was like, hey, we're gonna try something else at all the line, because I know LeBlanc is technically not like a linebackers coach, but then all the other linebackers coaches were changed, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying, because that it was the entire front seven, so their defensive linemen, their edge guys, and their off ball. Now they still kept William Pegler, their assistant defensive line coach. So
I'm still really, really interested what happened with LeBlanc. In the sense of, like, what was the reasoning? And like you said, it might just be as simple as, like, hey, we haven't been satisfied with what we've gotten out of.
Yeah, like you said, could it be performance-related? It could be philosophical. Maybe it was a case where Rollis, who was college teammates with DeLattaboudière, the new guy, really wanted him, like, finally was in a place where he said, I want that guy.
And I've said too, you know, wondering aloud, because we'll find out obviously after this next year, but you know, when Nick Rallis starts getting head coaching opportunities, you know, did they have the guy in house to be the replacement? Cause that's one of the things until recently that we've seen from the likes of, like, the San Francisco 49ers, obviously the Seattle Seahawks back in the Pete Carroll days, you know, we Baltimore Ravens, like all of those teams tend to have guys.
Oh, and the Cardinals did it when Todd Bowles left.
They right.
Betcher in house.
And so, you know, so that was my other thought, was LeBlanc, they didn't see as a long-term option, you know, like he's a D-line coach type only.
Yeah.
And so it's like, hey, let's find, like you said, all of it can work in symmetry together in this instance, because it does make sense, right? Like, hey, we're just going to go a different way. Sefkis, go find yourself something, because that's the other thing that people don't get, is like, it works out a lot of times that these guys have other opportunities and they're like, hey, go pursue those. Like,
yeah, we're not. Maybe Rodriguez, ultimately we end up seeing it. It wouldn't surprise me if we saw him follow Sefkis to Virginia Tech for whatever reason. Well, I see that's possible.
The other thing that's crazy to think is, like, when you look at, for instance, LeBlanc, he didn't get another D-line coach job. He got another.
He went down assistant to it. He went back to the assistant.
Assistant to the general manager, right? So,
assistant DL coach in Jackson.
No, I know. I was making a joke.
You know, we haven't talked about that yet, have we?
No,
we haven't. But, okay,
yeah, but I mean, like, you look at this group, you know, it's young, it's intriguing. they seem to be, you know, going towards a model of we really want youth and exuberance at these position coaches. Because I was thinking about it too, like, what's the DB's coach name that came from college? That
Patrick Toney.
Yeah, and you know, obviously Rallis and these guys, and Sifkis was young. You know,
I wrote about that today. Is the fact that, well, Jeff Rogers is the oldest. Well, excluding Buddy Morris, if we're talking about the coaches, the assistants, and the position coaches, Jeff Rogers is the oldest. And he's 47. He's younger than I am. But the additions that they add: Justin Fry, O-line coach, 41. Winston Delata-Boudier, 27. Christian Garcia,
he's 30. Yeah, Winston Delata-Boudier, the third.
Matt Feeney, their new outside linebackers coach, is 33. Their new defensive quality control coach, Alex Osborne, is 31. Another interesting departure was, and he's a guy that, like, this is a really in the weeds guy, Ronald Booker, their previous defensive quality control coach, was gone. And he was a guy that was also on Cliff Kingsbury's staff. And so he departs, and Alec Osborne, a different guy, comes in and replaces him. But I kind of went through the list. So one, age-wise, they're going with youth. But here's the other thing that's really interesting, because, you know, we got Jeff Rogers, who had that position previously. In fact, Jeff Rogers has now been on three different coaching staffs. He was with Steve Wilks, he was with Cliff Kingsbury, and he's now been with Jonathan Gannon, a guy. But he was previously special teams. He'd been a special teams coordinator, and he was an assistant head coach as well before. Only two other guys on their staff, I mean, talking about the ones that deal with the players and not with the training, had previously held that same position at the NFL level. And that is Drew Terrell at receivers coach. Although, guess what? He wasn't a passing game coordinator, but so we did get, he was a first time passing game coordinator. And tight ends coach Ben Steele had been a tight ends coach before in the NFL. Every other assist, like Monty Austin Fort, rookie, when he was hired, he'd never been GM. Jonathan Gannon, never been a head coach. Nick Rawlins, Drew Petzing, had never been offensive defense or defensive coordinators. And none of, with the exception of now Terrell, Steele, and Jeff Rogers, everyone on their staff was either first time in the NFL or first time in this position. And that includes the guys now. Delata-Boudier, never been in the NFL. Christian Garcia, he was an assistant defensive backs coach. He played linebacker. He played linebacker in college. Matt Feeney also coached defensive backs and was coached the off-ball backers on an interim basis. And so what they, like, these coaches, and for whatever reason, rather, like, we've seen other coaching staffs always have a blend of their guys who are, Bruce Arians had a mix of really old guys and really young guys. Cliff Kingsbury had a mix of experience and youth. But this is all about everyone's getting their first shot, which is, I wonder if this is on purpose, because I wonder if it brings some sort of the juice and energy for growth that Jonathan Gannon wants. But I think it's fine. I've never noticed this in previous staffs, but, like, everyone is new either to the league or to their position. And if we're going to go Jeff Rogers and Ben Steele, because when they brought Drew Terrell over, he was a receivers coach for Washington, but now the reason why he came over, they were able to lure him over, was with the passing game coordinator addition as well. And they did make two, and the other two moves that they made were promotions in-house for guys who were the on the Bill Bidwell Fellowship and took over positions. They moved up, which you like to see, but you continue to see that everyone, almost everyone on the staff is doing that job for the first time.
Yeah, and like you said, it creates competition. You know, it's one of those things where guys are hungry and want to grow and have these opportunities and not waste them, right?
Yeah. Did you find it interesting that both Garcia and Feeney, now the inside and outside linebackers coaches, were both previously coaching DBs?
Interesting in the fact that you wonder if that's a priority this offseason, right? Get better in coverage, especially from the linebacker positions.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, but do we have a pass rush guy? Do we have a pass rusher guy? I don't know. But yeah. In fact, let's do one other thing. I hadn't planned on this, but let's delve a little bit into this. Coming next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk web. I mean, we haven't talked about it. We want to talk about a little bit the newest nonsense that comes from the front office and Michael Bidwell. That's coming up next on Rise of Sierra. We're back on the Rise of Sierra podcast, Mr. Cardinals talk on the web. Michael Bidwell is a mixed bag. This is, you know, we're not going to delve super deep into this, but there seems to be a trend. We had Terry McDonough, you know, and his lawsuit for wrongful termination, and what he accused Michael Bidwell, the Cardinals owner, of. We've heard other reports from ESPN and a former Cardinals employee, a writer employee, talking about some of the difficult workplace environments. We've talked about the perceived sexist behavior, like when they wouldn't let they didn't want any of the female staff that worked in the building that weren't about football talking to the players or the coaches. They were very this and that. And now we have another one. It was his personal assistant, who apparently resigned at the end of January over the almost 5 years that she was employed, accuses him of like very, very poor work, of even illegal stuff, you know, just a lot of like her, like basically harassing her in like control stuff. And what I want to make clear, because there lots of people have said lots of things about Bidwell the person. I think we've seen we've got a dichotomy of Michael Bidwell. One, there's a lot of good that he does. There is. And he, and even his father, there are a lot of things in the public eye that he does at a macro level that I believe that he is at his core, like when it comes to society, economy, doing good, whether it's for his own benefit to look that way, he is good at a macro level. But at a micro level, like when you get working with the day-to-day, he is, for lack of a better word, a manipulative, spoiled control freak. If that makes sense.
He is, and it's one of those situations, too, that's unfortunate in that, you know, he's a guy that inherited the team, obviously intelligent, graduated law school, was an attorney, but you know, it wasn't as though all of his stuff came from, I don't want to say he didn't earn those things, but you know what I'm saying, little nepotism, right?
And which, and but that, I mean, long time family owned businesses like that, and there's been behind the scenes conflict with him and his siblings about running the team at different times. He likes to get his way and wants people to do things the way he wants to do it, and doesn't want to be bothered by the details, it sounds like, and yeah, is willing to do, like, the fact that he would, like, he got this car for his niece and then wanted her to stop attending Arizona State and on FaceTime show him retaking the car that he purchased for her and then reselling it. that's some deep, deep stuff. Like that's what in the world? That's it. What do you know what that is? That's, if this were in another time, that's mob style manipulation. You do this for the family. I'm the one in charge. I'm wearing the ring.
Right, exactly. And it's one of those situations, and it's unfortunate, you know, that it is that way, because it is a family business, like you said.
But yeah, it just, you know, he has, like, you look at the track record of the team since he took over the team. The team has been a far much more successful team. They have made improvements. They've invested far more into the team, into facilities. And even though there's still a stigma and a reputation of not being the best workplace environment for players in terms of facilities and weight room and meals, those have consistently improved. And I think there's probably a part of them that wants to be better for the players, but the business side of him, the bully side of him, is just, man.
And I think, unfortunately, too, he wants to be the reason why.
There's that too.
A little more than he needs to be, right? And so he gets caught up in that. Like, he wants to be the reason for everything, instead of allowing, you know, the team and things of that nature to be the reason for the success. He wants to be the guy. And that's, like you said, a little bit of an ego thing more than anything else, probably, right?
Yeah. And there's not a darn thing anyone can do about it. And so that's the downside, is like, you can't, it's the, unless there is actual, like,
legal things,
like actual, really, really misconduct. What we have here is a guy that's just an a-hole of a boss.
Right.
Oh man. Yeah, that's all I want to talk about, that, because, you know. Coming up next on the Res of Fury podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the web, we want to talk about another rumor that I ran across on social media, and that is the quarterback position. What they could do in free agency. That's coming up next on Res of Fury. We're back on the Res of Fury podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the web. Free agency is just under a month away. The negotiation window, as the media, like us, like to call it, the legal tampering period, which is a misnomer to begin with, because if it's legal, then it's not tampering. But it's fun to say. And March 10th, that begins. March 12th, the league year begins. And so nothing can happen until then. However, I ran across a tweet. It wasn't a reporter who tweeted it. It was one of our super fans on Twitter who was saying what a couple of guys, like guys we know on the PHNX Cardinals show, Bo Brock and Johnny Venerable. This tweet said that the Cardinals had inquired about signing Daniel Jones. And I'm going, whoa. Just in case that got some traction, let's make this very clear. There is no inquiring, because Daniel Jones cannot be traded because he is a free agent as of March 12th. And two, there can't be any inquiring with anyone representing Daniel Jones, because that is tampering. That said, Johnny and Bo said back in November when he was released, or whenever that was, October, November, when Daniel Jones was released by the Giants, that the Cardinals had interest in signing him. And we talked about Daniel Jones as being, if that's what he was looking for, he was a perfect pick for the Cardinals, because, you know, he's a starting caliber quarterback, and, you know, should anything happen to Kyler Murray, he'd be a perfect backup, something better than Clayton Tune. Nothing against Clayton Tune. We haven't seen enough from Clayton Tune to feel like he could hold the fort for the Cardinals any better than he or Josh Dobbs did it in 2023, which that was kind of a disaster. That said, it came out again on the PHNX show that the Cardinals will target Daniel Jones, but framed it as, you know, backup and competition for Kyler Murray. Do you like how that was framed? Because, you know, I don't think at any point the Cardinals are going to bring a good quarterback meant to compete. Now, other than just compete, they're not going to go into this offseason questioning whether Kyler's going to be the starter. He's their guy, Jonathan Cannon. Now, they will compete, obviously, that everything about Jonathan Cannon is competition. I don't have a problem with Daniel Jones being a target. However, what's your take on this?
I mean, we have to understand that he's not really good and that he's not an upgrade. He's not, like you said, he's not competition. He's just coming in as the backup. And that's the thing, too, is how much you want to spend on that. Like, how much money are you willing to put into that? That's the question for that. If he comes in at, you know, vet men, I don't think it's an issue. The only issue I have is that we have interesting fans that will be like, oh, Kyler had a bad game. We should probably go with Daniel.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, to me, it's a silly scenario, but, you know.
Well, yeah, for me, I mean, what the Cardinals, what I 100% expect the Cardinals to do is to do something like last offseason. I don't think, not necessarily a trade, but they will bring in a quarterback with the intent of competing with Clayton Tune to create competition there and less about the competition for the starting job. That creates a weird vibe in the locker room when you do that, especially when you have a guy as established as Kyler Murray.
Right.
Why in the world would Daniel Jones want that when there are quarterback? I'm sure 100% he believes he is a starting quarterback. He's been a starting quarterback for a while and would at least be looking for one of those jobs where, let's say, a Tennessee where Will Levis is not, you know, 100% entrenched as the starter.
What about Las Vegas?
Pittsburgh or Las Vegas. One, yeah. Like any of those places where one, a team where he could go in and be the starter, like a team goes, it was a bad situation in New York. We can do that. We've seen what he can do and that's good enough. We can work with that. Or it's somewhere where Sam Darnold, say like a Sam Darnold situation, he's not going to be looking for a $2 million a year backup job. It's going to be a legitimate backup job with the possibility for more starts. And I just don't think fantastic. I would love Daniel Jones as the backup quarterback here because we've seen the ceiling, which is an above average quarterback. You don't get that out of most backup quarterbacks, right?
No, you don't.
You don't. Like you don't get that level. In fact, that's one of the reasons we kind of liked the idea of getting Desmond Ridder because what he had played as a starter in his career was 100% mediocre. And if you have a mediocre quarterback as your backup, that's really not a bad situation to be in.
No, not at all.
And Clayton Tune ended up beating him out, and Desmond Ridder ended up getting to start a couple games. And so that worked out, and he was, you know, perfectly mid in those games. So Daniel Jones is a backup. I love the idea. How much is money going to want? One, he's going to get more money than he can get here. He will have a better opportunity to start, better opportunity to play, and probably more money on the table elsewhere. So, sure, the Cardinals might have interest. They might target him. But you can target whatever player you want. If the interest is not mutual, nothing's going to happen.
Right. And in the scheme of what they need, it's so low on the list, right?
Yeah. Like there are, and I was looking at the quarterback list. Let me see. No, that was on my other computer. So this one, I have the Eagles free agents listed. So if we pull up the free agent quarterbacks coming up, there are a bunch. I'm like Sam Darnold, you know, he's going to get a starting job or like Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Jacoby Brissett, Taylor Heineke, Marcus Mariota, Drew Locke, Andy Dalton, Jared. All of these just kind of guys, right? Just these kind of guys around. You know, Jameis Winston would be a blast as a backup. But you know, ultimately Daniel Jones, I think he would be a wonderful, wonderful addition as a backup. Why in the world would he come here?
Exactly.
But yeah, so if the, like,
I don't hate the idea. I just don't see it happening.
Right. And the idea that they're, that's one of their offseason priorities is to get Daniel Jones. I'm like, I mean, focus on getting guards, some pass rushers, defensive linemen that don't get hurt, a linebacker. I mean, there's so many other places. I know it, when I get to the positional previews for leading up to free agency, I'm going to say what the Cardinals are probably going to do at the position is bring in someone to compete with Clayton Tune today. And it'll be telling the way they view Tune. If they bring in a Taylor Heinicke, guys who've had a little bit of experience starting, if they bring in someone that's above the level of, say, Desmond Ridder to compete with Tune, then they think, or if they bring in like a Andy Dalton, let's say, he's been in the NFL a gazillion years, they're saying we want something better than Clayton, as opposed to we're going to bring someone in who could do the job, but we think Clayton still could do it. I'm interested in how they view that this offseason, because with every opportunity that we've had to hear Jonathan Gannon talk about Clayton Tune, it's all been positive for both years that he's been with the team.
Right, and he's done everything they've asked him to do on top of it.
Yep. Yep, he's been fine. Just, you know, the Cardinals are effed anyway if Kyler Murray ever gets hurt. And I mean, in a playoff race, a Daniel Jones is your best option, because you can float. You can stay above water with him. And even, you know, kind of like when Colt McCoy was around, you didn't feel when Drew Stanton was the backup, when Colt McCoy was the backup, like, it was definitely a downgrade, but you felt like, okay, we can survive this.
Right.
None of us feel that way about any backup quarterback the Cardinals have had since Colt McCoy.
Correct.
Anything else of note before Seth will be on hiatus, as he will be gone. I will see what we do next week. I have perhaps, a former Cardinal I can bring on the show who is doing an interesting thing in his post NFL career now. So hopefully I can connect with that guy and then we'll go from there. Seth, it's been a good week.
Yeah, man, I appreciate the time and enjoy next week, and I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right. And that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is Right Ups Here Podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. We'll be back again soon. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red. Whoa!